Taking my coat off is a sign that we've started, I think. What I want to do by way of scene setting is just to reflect a little bit with you upon, yes, upon the Damascus Road and what happened for Paul on it, and of how that's recorded and of what we make of it and of its significance. But also, if you like, to reflect a little bit on the kind of topography, not in a geographical sense, but in a historical and religious and theological sense that's wrapped around that moment in Paul's own life and in the development of the Christian church. So if you like, for that Damascus Road journey, some of the things that get packed into the case for the journey in that direction, and then to unpack some of them. It's very scary doing this sort of unpacking in front of people, at least some of whom I know are far more capable than I am of doing this unpacking. But that's the risk of the role that I have, and I'm happy to run it. After the death of Jesus, after the experience that the friends of Jesus, his disciples, had of all of that, what happened next? What was the immediate kind of setting and surround for Paul's experience? We hear the gospel writers talking about the sense that they'd formed from what Jesus said, or from what they discerned themselves, that they were to stay in Jerusalem and wait for the gift of the Spirit. Paul's letters certainly confirm the importance of Jerusalem in the early life of the church. So that's one strand of what was around, the significance of Jerusalem. They continue to meet together after his death. That much is very clear. Some of them, at least, had experiences of how many different kinds, or of what kinds, we can't know in detail, which convinced them, beyond any shadow of doubt, that Jesus was still very much alive and very much with them. And that in such a way which gave them the confidence to risk everything in their lives for the sake of that knowledge and truth. They received an experience which they described as being filled with the energy and the power of God, with the Spirit. So members of that early church is the wrong sort of word to call it, but that early gathering, or groups of gathering, in Jerusalem, met in fellowship, in homes, led by the close friends of Jesus, the apostles, and remembered him in the breaking of bread. And they shared their property. And they were all Jews at first, all of whom believed in Jesus as Messiah, but were coming to terms with a different understanding of what messiahship was all about than what they'd thought in the past. This rosy picture breaks down quite quickly. Breaks down with the deception of Ananias and Sapphira, who sort of kept back their parish share, really, and only paid part of it. You may well laugh, but it's true. That's what. Take note. I wouldn't tell Wendy. Go on. Followed quickly by the dispute between the Hebrews and the Hellenists, between those who are very much within, like, the Jewish camp and the Greek camp. Probably all Jews, but speaking Aramaic and Hebrew on the one hand and Greek on the other, who came from scattered Jewish communities overseas. And the most significant division between them was probably around the kind of distinctive theology which the Greek speakers developed, which was possibly quite critical of the temple and of strict Jewish law. They were probably more radical, and understanding and taking the teaching of Jesus in a rather more liberal way than if you were within the tightly knit Jewish tradition. There was persecution in Jerusalem against those Greek-speaking followers of Jesus, and some of them left and went elsewhere. And that's how we get the sense of there being people also in other parts of Palestine, like, not Palestine, but further north in Syria, in Jordan, in Damascus, and so on, who were part of that crew. As they went, they took that gospel with them, and they shared it with those they met. Some of them shared it with non-Jews, not just Greek speakers, but non-Jews, which was a quite radical step. And some of those who joined that fellowship were permitted to do so without becoming Jews in the full sense. And that's the sort of context that lies behind this image that we've given of Paul going off to Damascus to persecute Christians. We need to unpack that a little bit, both because that terminology is probably quite wrong to use then, but also because if Paul was about that sort of thing, it wouldn't have been about people being followers of Jesus. It would have been about people being followers of Jesus, but also rejecting becoming Jews or becoming within the Jewish tradition to do that, and trying to be followers of this essentially Jewish sect, this Jewish Christian following of the way, but not buying into the whole package of Judaism. And that, as you well know, was what Paul was passionate about, extremely passionate with great, great missionary fervor to bring people to God, but to bring people to God within the understanding of who God was and how he deals with us, which was there in the Jewish tradition. It's important to remember that Paul was a missionary, a zealous missionary for God, before he ever started speaking the name of Jesus. And that's important to remember. Paul's passion for God and for mission for God was very, very deep within him and came out of his Jewish roots. And that makes his Damascus Road experience all the more significant. Let's turn for a minute to the Damascus Road, which I need to go back to my coat here to turn the machine on up here. So if I do that, does it turn on? Oh, it did. Look at that. Isn't that marvelous? I can't see it at all now, of course, from behind here. The Damascus Road, a fairly bleak place, as far as we can know, a fairly wild place. Damascus Road now looks like that, rather different. But it's important to remember that in Paul's day, it looked like the equivalent of that. You know, it was the main highway. And as well as being potentially wild, potentially remote, would have had people on it. It was a main trade route. What happened on that road? I'm putting my wire off here. Okay, that's a question for me to you. What happened on that road? Sorry, again?
He met Jesus.
The sun shone all around him. Shone all around him.
A blinding light.
Blinding light.
Ground.
A voice.
A voice.
He fell to the ground.
Fell to the ground.
Struck blind.
Transformation.
His companions didn't understand what was going on.
Right. Thank you. Yes. Okay. Anything else?
They didn't hear or see anything.
They didn't hear or see anything. Okay? Let's quickly go on through this, back through there. Some images of all of this, which is what we're familiar with. This is a kind of Sunday school book type image, as one depiction of... Do you remember it well? You probably do, actually. I mean, you've probably got books with that in, really. A different kind of depiction of it. This is a 16th century painting by a French artist, Fouget. Very formal, very structured, but the elements of it are there. But there with a kind of laser-type beam, straight in. A different image, this one from Caravaggio. Different atmosphere, sort of romantic, well done, well spotted, extra bonus points. A kind of romantic feel. It's all fairly dark, it's mysterious. There's a kind of ghostly sense of what's going on. You're peering into the gloom. And a final image whose the origin of which, and the artist, I can't discover. I've called this an anon. But picking up very much the sense of that huge moment of illumination. It's been a theme which throughout history has captured the imagination of artists. The significance of the event has captured the imagination of theologians. And yet Paul makes no reference to it at all. I'll say that again. Paul makes no reference to it, certainly in any of those terms at all. In the book of the Acts of the Apostles, it's mentioned 3 times. Luke, the historian, is whom we rely upon for the account that we see here depicted, that has in it all of those elements that you quite rightly remembered and spotted. Let me ask you the question next, and I know you'll know the answer to this. What does Paul say about anything that might lie behind that experience?
Yep,
that's really sort of more than halfway there. Thanks, that's good.
He heard an apostle Jesus. That comes from there, meeting Jesus.
Yes, linked with that as well.
He heard Jesus saying, "Why are you persecuting me?"
That's in this account, not in Paul's. Let me read to you what Paul says. When he who had set me apart before I was born and had called me through his grace was pleased to reveal his son to me, that's the key bit, in order that I might preach him among the Gentiles. And then he goes on to say, I did not confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me. I went away into Arabia, returned again to Damascus. Paul refers very clearly and very specifically to either a time or a series of experiences or a process by which he came to know Jesus revealed to him in that fullness of mystery and meaning of which Paul speaks many, many, many times through his writing. What he doesn't do necessarily is speak of it as a single event or in a single place. Now, it's quite interesting because, I mean, presumably and clearly, Paul and Luke had access to the same sort of sets of information. It's quite important in our understanding of what was going on in the compilation and writing of the New Testament, sometimes to have clearly in our minds, as you well do in your preaching, what the writer of that particular bit of material had in mind and was trying to do. For Luke, clearly, writing later and writing a connected narrative of the history of the early church in a way which was trying to present a particular kind of picture of what was going on, the significance of Paul's turnaround was so enormous that he wanted to paint it and picture it in a very, very powerful set of images and kind of way, and does it three times, because he goes on to repeat it on two other occasions when Paul is reported as talking, but is, of course, Luke reporting it, when Paul is reported as talking to two audiences and giving that sort of description. It's important to remember that that is actually Luke speaking. Paul's own speaking, his own writing in Galatians, puts it in a rather more modest kind of way. But the fact that Paul, as it were, almost plays down any kind of technicolor kind of scenario doesn't in any way militate against the significance of what was going on there. We normally talk about the Damascus Road experience and Damascus Road moment or as being the conversion of St. Paul. We're about to come to that feast day in the life of the church. Now, of course, Paul didn't need to do any conversion to anything. Paul was a Jew. Paul was a Jew through and through. He was a missionary Jew. For Paul, Jesus could have been seen quite clearly and straightforwardly without any sense of conversion as God's Messiah who had come to fulfill all the promises of God made to the Jewish people and recorded throughout their history in the Old Testament. There was no more need for Paul to convert than there was for Peter or James or John or any of the others, when you look at it in that kind of way. And yet we speak of Paul's conversion as being very, very significant. And it was. Because the transformation, the conversion that happened in Paul was to a totally different way of understanding all that he had learnt and all that he had been brought up with and all that he had taught and all that he had imagined about the way that God deals with us. So it wasn't, if you like, a conversion to Jesus. It was a conversion through recognizing that in Jesus God was present and God was still present through the risen Jesus. It was a conversion to recognizing that everything that he had thought and been taught and brought up with about the relationship between God and people and God and creation had to be turned totally upside down. And the profound nature of that turning upside down, we are still actually struggling with. Because there is, I think, within all of us and within the church, an instinct that still wants to see sometimes the relationship between people and God as being one that in some kind of way, ever so faintly, can be either measured or controlled or contained, or seen in terms of activity and reward. The total transformation for Paul, the total conversion, if you like, was to recognize that before God, we are all of us utterly lost. And having been brought up within a tradition, Paul's tradition, where you coped with that business of not being right with God by in some way trying to cope with that by keeping God's law. That was a huge transformation for him. Paul's missionary activity before this kind of experience, Paul's missionary activity was to bring people to God by saying, to be right with God, what you need to do is to observe God's law. The law is there not to keep you from God, but to bring you to him. Paul's realization was that that couldn't be done. It couldn't happen and didn't need to happen. Because in what Paul came to understand, Paul came to understand that in Jesus, God was saying, I love you this much. You don't need to do anything about that. And that may be quite hard for you. What you have to do is to recognize that you can't do anything about it. And that may be quite hard for you too, says Paul. So it's that turning around which is at the heart, at the fundamental heart of the Christian gospel, that Paul, as far as we know, if not the first to see, was certainly the first to try and write down. There is much, much more by way of introduction that I'd like to explore. There's a lot of me that would want to go on to talk about what happened after the event, if indeed it was on the road. What happened to Paul in Damascus? How the accounts in the New Testament between what Luke writes and what Paul writes about happened to him and why he was let down the wall on a rope, how all that ties up together. I encourage you to go in that direction and explore it for yourself, because something then of the different purposes that both the book of the Acts of the Apostles and what Paul in his preaching and teaching are trying to achieve, hopefully, will bubble up to the surface for you. But I want to draw this very short introduction to a close in a moment by reading that which certainly to me communicates something of the passion and the vision and the glory that inspired Paul. The kind of white shining light which was shining in him and out from him all of the time. And I want to invite you to let that kind of sense of being open to meeting the Lord on the Damascus Road, wherever and wherever it occurs for you. In a conversation with someone, in something someone says, in prayer, in some simple act, in some mysterious moment, but to be open to the fact that we are all of us, all of the time, on some kind of Damascus Road. Find where I am in a minute. The developed understanding that Paul came to. Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. In him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. In him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. And through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether in heaven or in earth, making peace by the blood of his cross. For a Friday evening, an introduction, let's pause there. My only regret is that we haven't got another 3 or 4 hours.